So virtual assistant is someone who doesn't work in your office. It's somebody who works virtually. It could be someone who lives in the United States. It could be someone who lives in other countries as well. Any task that could be done over the phone, over the internet, a virtual assistant can do.
Hello, Patrick Lilly here, and welcome to Real Estate Success Rocks podcast, where we ask the question, what does success mean to you? We have a new patron of our podcast. Her name is Janine Young. She's with Bond Real Estate here in New York, and their website is bondnewyork.com. And go there and look up Janine if you're looking for a good agent in New York City. And today, we're going to do a topic that is always timely. We're going to talk about virtual assistants and basically everything you need to know about whether or not hiring a virtual assistant makes sense for your business, what to look out for, all those sort of things, whether you should be doing it on your own or hiring a firm. So with that in mind, I'd like to welcome Bob LaChance. Hey, Bob.
How are you? Thanks for having me, Patrick.
I am good. Thank you. Bob is the owner, president, the CEO, something of RevaGlobal.com. And Reva Global is basically a company that provides virtual assistance for many different industries, including real estate agents and mortgage brokers.
Exactly. So first of all, thanks for having me. And this is a great topic, and I love your podcast. First and foremost, I've been a listener for a little over a year, so thank you for doing this.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that, Bob. All right, so let's just, if anybody out there doesn't know, and there may be somebody out there that doesn't know, like I just learned what the Instagram icon was the other day, so there might be people out there that don't know. What exactly is a virtual assistant?
It's very simply, So a virtual assistant is someone who doesn't work in your office. It's somebody who works virtually. It could be someone who lives in the United States. It could be someone who lives in other countries as well. Our company's based, I live in Connecticut, literally right down the street from you, right down a couple different highways, but we're right near each other. But my company is actually based out of the Philippines. So any task that can be done over the phone, over the internet, a virtual assistant can do.
All right. So that's interesting because there's a couple of firms that are all based in the Philippines that do virtual assistants work. Why do you think that that nation of all the nations has been a good fit for virtual assistants?
Well, first and foremost, the English proficiency is top notch. English is one of their main languages there in the Philippines. So it just works out really, really well in the comprehension of the English language, it being one of the main languages, is the reason why a lot of us, me included, decided to end up working in the Philippines.
And the cost of doing business there, and this is one of the reasons that you hire a VA, is that there's a tremendous cost savings.
Correct. Being in New York and in Connecticut, for me to get somebody at $960 or $1060 an hour, I'd be very, very hard pressed to find someone of the quality that has our virtual assistant have. Each and every one of them has a college degree, which, you know, if I'm going to hire someone here in Connecticut with a college degree, they would never work for me for $960 or $1060 an hour. That's some of the things that a huge benefit for the Philippines as well.
Yeah, it doesn't even hit minimum wage in New York.
Right.
It doesn't even come close. But secondly, it's interesting because I have used virtual assistants from the Philippines before myself, and it's interesting to see the quality of the VAs there. All right, so we now know what a virtual assistant is. What are the tasks that you would say VAs are most appropriate for?
So I break it down into five steps, and this will probably be very, very simple for, you know, each of your listeners. Number one, it's marketing. So step number one, what I like to do, if you don't mind, Patrick, I like to break things down into numbers so it makes it easier for, you know, when I'm teaching. I just said a lot like you, I do a lot of teaching and educating. So it's one of the things that I noticed that you do a lot of, which this will make sense to you. So number one is marketing, and I'll break down the tasks that each and every one of us as agents or real estate professionals could provide. Number two is lead intake, whether it's inbound or outbound. Number three, it's deal analysis, which are CMAs. Number four is contract/offer. And number five is selling. So when you break each step into that, whether you're, you know, a real estate agent, real estate investor, whatever it is, those five steps still play a role and are the main steps in each of our listings, each of our deals, etc. So you want me to take some time to break down a couple of these?
No, I'd like to break down all five because, you know, I've used virtual assistants before in the past, and sometimes it's been a great fit and sometimes it hasn't. And it's usually been because of what the content of the work I had them doing wasn't appropriate. And I had to learn that the hard way, but then I get to share it with everybody else. So let's start with the marketing, which was number one.
The reason why, I'll just touch upon a little bit why that probably was, we do DISC profiling before we actually bring on a virtual assistant. And then when we place the virtual assistant with an individual, a real estate agent that has certain tasks, we make sure those tasks fit what their what their personality is. So that could be one of the reasons. I don't know if you ever did a DISC profile.
The other, we did do DISC profiles on it, and we'll talk about what my problems were later. Let's break down your SPART first.
Absolutely. So marketing, what we do as a virtual assistant and what virtual assistants can actually do for each and every one of us. You know, I was listening to one of your podcasts, Lael Sturm, and he talked about social media and media presence. That's one of the things that a VA can do. They could post Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. That's typically what I do. And what they'll do is they'll post anything that will have any local kind of article, maybe a motivational Monday, a local news Tuesday, world news Wednesday, any type of tip that you want. And the reason why you'll want some sort of social media presence is to make sure, you know, when we have buyers or sellers look us up and they Google us or they Facebook us, we want to make sure that we have a presence there that builds credibility and gives them confidence in working with us. So that would be one of the tasks that virtual assistants are very, very good at.
All right. So I'm going to interject while you're doing this because I'm going to play the devil's advocate sometimes with you, Bob. That's how we get to a good place. So one of the things with social media that, you know, most people recommend that it's usually better if it's in your own voice and not somebody else's voice. So not everybody can do that. And a lot of people pan out their social media to other people or VAs or people on their team. How do you train those individuals in the Philippines about what your voice is that you want to be out on the social media table?
So for the social media presence, what I like to look at that, I break it up into two different things. There are something that you and I need to do to obviously show our faces. But what VAs can do is they could post a motivational post every single week. So what we do is we set a calendar up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then we actually have them post something with the logo of our company on and actually send that out. So if it's a leadership quote, what you do is you take a nice backdrop photo. They do this for you. And you put your logo on the bottom right. And then you put some kind of quote that we have them actually do. We set this up all prior to the week that happens. And they post, let's say they do that on Monday.
And then I assume that you, if you so choose, you can review those posts ahead of time to see if it's in your voice or doesn't rely to your voice.
Correct. We have a lot of pre-done stuff already. And then if it wants to be in your voice, that's good for me. I just want to make sure that my presence is out there.
Got it.
So that would be one of them. The other one on the marketing side, you could break it up into two different legs, which would be new listings and new buyers. So for marketing, I always recommend this. We have hundreds of agents and hundreds of investors actually that use our service. And one of the untapped markets that I'm seeing and some real estate agents that are doing incredible are working with investors. Now, I could give you some of the campaigns that investors are doing because they're working side by side. How many times have you heard on the radio a real estate company coming into your town that's an investment company coming into your town saying, hey, we have a select few seats, et cetera, et cetera. Patrick, how many times have you heard that in New York?
Too many.
All right, too many. But there's an opportunity there. That's why I love that. Because when they have those events, if those individuals become investors, there's an incredible opportunity to work with investors. And here's why. Because if you look at different types of investors out there, I know you had Mitch Stevens on there with Owner Financing on your podcast, which he's a phenomenal guy. You could work with wholesalers and rehabbers, and here's why. They have some incredible marketing that they can do that obviously licensed agents may or may not be able to do, depending on if each broker is okay with whatever they do. But I'm not going to get into that. So
yeah, I don't think we should go into what that is, but how would the VA actually help promote that?
So the great thing is, and one of the campaigns that's working out fantastic is outbound dialing to gauge seller motivation. Now, what I mean by that is they download a list. Let's just say, since we're in the Northeast, it's winter time right now. So tenant occupied properties are a great list to grab because all the snow, all the tenant problems, et cetera. So what we have a lot of real estate agents do is they work with those investors because they're using VAs to outbound dial, skip trace. Well, they pull the list down, they skip trace the list, they outbound dial to gauge seller motivation if they're willing to sell. Now, the good thing about being a real estate agent is probably about 95% of those properties investors can't buy because they need to buy those properties at such a lower number than the individual's homeowners want. So those are the leads that get transferred over to a real estate agent and has a potential listing. I think that's a huge untouched market out there.
Okay, so in addition to that, I assume they could be calling expireds and FSBOs too, correct?
I have that on my list as well, yeah.
So let's talk about that. So this is where I ran into a problem. This is where it did not work for me. You know, because my expireds that we go after are luxury properties. And we had really competent, in terms of quality of people that I was able to talk to physically and train them from the Philippines. I couldn't get any leads where I actually get to go in and meet with the seller. Because the New York luxury market, the people who would pick up the phone realized they were not New Yorkers calling them. And I could never even get an appointment. So I'm wondering, is that a function of really high-end buyers or sellers, or is it a New York thing?
You know what? It's actually a great question, because what I found, some of it is in the scripting as well. Because if you just go right, and this is what I found in Connecticut, right? So when I found in Connecticut, where we have our outbound dialers calling to gauge seller motivation, we just changed our scripting to say, hey, I'm calling on behalf of my boss. We're just looking to see if you're interested in possibly selling your property, as an example, rather than, hey, I'm looking to buy five properties in the area, you know, so on and so forth. So a lot of it does have to do with scripting. Higher end markets, and I agree with you 100%, sometimes don't pull as well as, you know, mid to lower markets.
Which makes sense. It makes sense after the fact. I'm not sure it made sense before I paid the money, but it certainly makes sense after the fact. All right. So anything else on marketing?
Well, on the marketing side, the different tasks that they could do as well on the new listing side. So once they get the leads in on the new listing side, you could create, obviously, hand out the seller credibility packets, the CMAs, inputting data in the MLS.
Just about any administrative work, for the most part, that doesn't need to be licensed, they can probably handle much less expensively. That's not even a word, is it? They can handle it more efficiently than if you had somebody in town.
Yep. And some of the other tasks are, you know, our VA's call about getting on different podcasts. For many of your agents love getting on podcasts and do an incredible job on those that will, and then spread the word of what they do as well. They can make, obviously, different MLS offers for their buyers are something else they could do. Craigslist postings. Those are just some of the other lists that we found our successful agents actually use VAs for.
Okay, good. So let's go to the next topic then.
All right, so lead intake and outbound. So obviously, when we're marketing and we're getting either buyers' leads or sellers' leads in, they could take those actually inbound calls and set appointments for agents. That's been an extremely helpful because agents aren't making any money unless they're sitting in an appointment, locking up either a buyer or a new listing. So for them to actually spend a lot of time doing that, we have found that VAs are doing a great job of gauging that type of motivation to set that appointment.
Awesome. And the bigger the team you have, the more valuable that tool might be, actually, too. So, all right, great. Next one.
Next one for deal analysis. We found that a lot of our real estate agent clients spend way too much time creating CMAs, right? And that's been a really good tool that virtual assistants could actually create, where we send them the actual listing and they go through the MLS and create the CMA for them. Saves a lot of time. That's one of the big ones in our deal analysis that we've been finding.
That's interesting because I have noticed that too when I've been coaching people that some agents spend way too much time on their CMAs. At the same time, I've also noticed, again, the higher you go up in price, the harder it is to farm out the CMA because when you're at middle and lower price points, there are a lot more readily comparable units. But when you get into luxury, the apples to apples relationship often does not exist.
Yeah, and that's 100% right, because that's when you go into a different market like West Hartford or Greenwich, Connecticut, or different areas, you go across the street and the properties do change just like that, right? Dramatically. 100%. So what we do is we have the VAs again do those numbers and we double check them to see if we like the CMAs, and then that works. If it doesn't, then obviously we'll have a little tweaking to do.
Okay, cool. Next topic.
Contract offer. Typically for buyers, we have a lot of agents that represent investor buyers that just do a ton of offers. And there's a couple of formulas that they use. For instance, they'll, and I, this is just a formula. This is not a, this is just what some of the investors want the agents to do, is they'll look at, let's say, Zillow, and we know Zillow is all over the map, but they'll do something along the lines of, hey, we're going to put a first offer in at 70% of what that property is listed for as a first offer to gauge what seller motivation and other agent motivation is to see if that's a potential deal. That is something that I've seen our clients use our VAs for as well.
Awesome. Next topic.
Next topic, selling. That's transaction coordination. It's all the admin stuff, starting a file with an attorney, lawyer, buyer, seller, contract, putting contracts on file, coordinating, appraisals, inspections, things like that.
Yeah, and especially when you have a workflow, this type of thing is great for a VA.
All the checklists that you have in your office, 100% on the, and they call it transact or contract to close or transaction coordinating, things like that. Another thing that I found that has worked really well is the mortgage management behind it, because a lot of time is wasted, checking to see if your buyers are qualified. Right. Say, hey, did they get this document in? Did they get that document in? Did they get this one? So on and so forth. So that's been a really good time saver.
Awesome. All right, so that's a good summary of what they can do. I know from having dealt with my own concerns and then other people's concerns about hiring VAs, is that what many agents fear is that how do you know if they're even working? How do you know if what they're billing for you is getting done since you're not even up at the same time of day?
That is a great question. We actually put a second level of management that we put into. So you have your virtual assistant, and we have a manager on top of that virtual assistant that is there for you, not only with the VA, but also on the management side that actually helps manage the whole process. So there's a second layer. There's also some software, if you wanted to download it, like Time Doctor, that could record the screen to make sure your VA is working. You could, use tools like RingCentral that records all the calls. So there's a number of things that you could actually do to make sure that, you're getting every penny worth of your VA.
I was worried about that when I first hired the VAs that I worked with, and I found out that it ended up that the controls and the tracking was more than acceptable, and I saw the amount of work that was being done. So I don't think as an agent you need to work about that. All right, so let's talk about the different ways of hiring a VA. Now, clearly, the easiest way is just to like call up you or call up one of your competitors and say, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, what's it going to cost me, X, Y, and Z? That's probably the easiest. And there's a lot of benefits to that in that there's a long line of history of training the VA so that the company knows who's good and who isn't good, and they know how to match people up and they know how to manage them. So that's really good. In case somebody gets sick, somebody else can cover also. So those are the benefits to doing that. Now, not everybody wants to do that. Some people want to do it on their own and hire somebody on their own and not go to a company like yours. We know that there's some drawbacks to that, but why don't you just explain how that could be done if they wanted to do that?
Absolutely. Well, there's a couple of different ways you could do it. So there are some Facebook groups, some work from home Facebook groups in other countries, or even the United States, that you could search for virtual assistants. So just go to Facebook and type in, if you want someone from India, let's just say, you could go type in India work from home. So what you're going to do is then you're going to join those groups, and then you're going to solicit and ask for individuals for whatever skill set that you want, and if they do those certain jobs.
I've done that for a lot of things. So I use Upwork myself when I do that. And that's when I have a very specific job that I want to find somebody to do it. So for instance, my podcast editor, Richard Pennington, who's in England, outside of London or a suburb of London, I think, I found him through a service. I think it was Upwork. It may have been a previous version of Upwork. And that has worked out perfectly for me. And he works, you know, he does every episode for us. But that's a little bit different. That's sort of like contracting a VA to do a very specific job, whereas the VAs they could hire through you might be multitasking and doing many different items than just the one thing that Richard does for me.
Correct. And that is exactly right. What happens is, so we have, and I'll back into this, we have part-time and full-time VAs, that's all we offer. We don't offer per hour because we found if you offer per hour, they do exactly what you just said. One other challenge too, and the reason why I started Riva Global is because I've worked with companies like Upwork, and the VAs just got up and left. And when they did leave, I'm like, all right, what do I do now? Now I have to start the whole process. I have to go back. I have to look at every single resume again. I have to go through the interview process, et cetera, et cetera. So we just created a recruiting company that recruits virtual assistants, recruiting department, training department, now placements department that sets up the client interviews. So you could definitely go to Upwork, but you do have to go through the process like you stated earlier when we just got on the call about sifting through all the resumes, you know, maybe going through 50 of them to get to one client interview, and then all of a sudden you hire them and then they leave the next week.
Yeah.
So those are some of the challenges you run into.
And Richard has been with me pretty close to the beginning, so thank you for sticking with me, Richard, by the way. And then there's always the other option of somebody on your team gets pregnant and there's an illness in their family. They really need to move to another state or work from home, or they want to be with their kids the full time, but they're really, really good. That's a great way of turning that person into a virtual agent that they don't need to be in the office.
Correct. That is a great point. And there are some great ones here in the United States. They just cost a little bit more.
Yes, they cost a lot more than a little bit more, but yes.
I'm trying to be nice, but I do. They cost a lot more than they do.
And there's some benefits if they know your system, you know how they work, they know you. That can be a big, big plus. So, yeah. You know, you have to play with this and figure out what task. The way I like to look at it, you know, one of my coaches was Dr. Fred Gross, and he's coached a lot of my friends. And he always said that every task you do has a dollar cost to it. So there's a certain cost to lead generation, and there's a certain cost to faxing a letter. And not everybody can generate leads really well. So the value of lead generation may not be something that you would, may or may not be, but in general, may not be something that you want to delegate out. But delegating out faxing sheets of paper makes sense because that's not a good use of your time. And that's what we're talking about, is figuring out what the cost of each of these activities that are currently going on your team, and is there a way to be more cost effective and to get things done in a way that makes sense?
Correct. And that's the way, and I'm glad you put it that way, because you start looking at what is your dollar per hour worth, right? If, you know, if let's say you have 40 hours a week to work, what is that? Is your dollar per hour worth $100, $50, $200? What does that look like?
And keep on going up.
Yeah, well, that's yeah, 300, 400, 500, which is a great
point. There you go. There you go.
It's a great point. I mean, I know everyone's at a different level. So the higher you get, the more a virtual assistant can actually take the stuff that you absolutely don't like doing, or just the admin stuff that takes, you know, your money generating time off of your day or out of your day.
You know, and one of the other benefits of having a VA is that they can be part-time, and it's much easier to hire a part-time VA because, let's say there again with your firm, you may have several VAs that are working part-time, but because they're working with three or four of your clients or your customers, I should say, then they're actually working full-time, but you're only paying for a quarter of their time.
Right. Correct. And that's a great point. So if you have someone part-time and they do have two clients, that's a full-time job. You will keep them for a long, 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 long time because they're not out there looking for other work.
Yeah.
It was just really, really important. The other challenge you find, Patrick, is that just to get back to sometimes why virtual assistants will leave, is because a lot of these companies don't give them any health insurance, which we pay for, which I think is really, really important. So if you are looking at other companies or even going to Upwork, just ask if they offer any of that, because that's a big reason why some virtual assistants leave any Upwork job too, as well, to join companies like mine.
So since so many of the people on Upwork and in the VA industry tend to not be in the United States, how do you effectively deal with the time differences?
They actually work night shift, which yep. is so we're they're 100% 12 hour difference. So they're working our days. We're on East Coast, so they'll work from 9 to 5 Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, that's what I had when I had my people from the Philippines doing it. All right. So I like the overarching nature of this conversation. Are there any other elements of hiring a VA that we haven't discussed already that my listeners should be aware of?
You know, I think the best, the most important thing is to make sure that when you do have a VA or virtual assistant join your team, you do a great job at vetting. So I would highly recommend, whether you work with us or a different company, I would highly recommend you could go to TonyRobbins.com and get a free disc profile that you could send a virtual assistant through. Because I think that is really, so Patrick, that's really, really important, because matching up the tasks that we want the VA to do, it's got to fit what their personality profile looks like.
I agree 1,000%. Okay, I agree 100%. There's no such thing as 1,000%. I agree 100%. All right. Before we talk about how they get a hold of you, in case they want to look into your services, let's leave our audience with one good tip that they could grow their business by using a VA in residential resales.
One good tip by growing their business, I think it would be, one of them is having an online presence, social media presence, not on only Facebook, but also LinkedIn and Instagram. You know, all three of those are the big three that I think are really, really important. And you could build through those three platforms, you could build a really, really good buyers list, meaning more individuals that want to buy properties through those three platforms, and also getting listings that way through referrals. So I think those are the three that, you know, I would spend a lot of time and use virtual assistants to, you know, obviously bump up my profile.
Awesome. Bob, if people want to reach out to your company or to you, how would they do that?
You could either go to my website, which is revaglobal.com, which is revaglobal.com.
Which is real estate virtual assistant, if anybody's missing the acronym there, but okay.
That's it. Or you could just send me an email direct at bob@revaglobal.com. And again, that's bob@revaglobal.com.
How do you spell your first name?
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, I'm an asshole sometimes, so just
I love it. Love it.
Listen, Bob, thank you so much. B.O.B., thank you so much for sharing what you and your company do, and I'm sure that was very helpful to our listeners. Thank you.
Awesome. Appreciate the time. You have an awesome day. Thanks a lot, Patrick.